Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live. Today is Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. Dan Williams is on with me today. We're going to be talking about Dan's work in EMS consulting and specifically EMS compliance, a really big and important area for EMS leadership and those that are completing patient care forms. Dan, hello and welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Great to have you with us. Dan also is a frequent contributor to the podcast, so his voice is very familiar to EMS throughout the state of Wisconsin. And Dan is the previous state EMS director, had also many management roles with Door County EMS, with Flight for Life, Paratech Ambulance. Dan, I mean, you've been around a long time, Dan. You've seen a lot of change over the 40 years in EMS, and you're doing your work in consulting, and I know that you've picked up a really important area here for compliance. Seems like ambulance services need to know more about this.
Well, that's true. I've been fortunate to have gained experience in a lot of different areas of EMS, and one of the things that started to draw my attention as I was winding down my career was the fact that compliance has become such a big issue in EMS, and that so few people even knew about it, and even fewer had done anything about it. And I thought, well, you know, if this is something that I can do to help some people, and because it's a lot of busy work, and I say that, you know, not in a demeaning way. It's just that there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle that have to be taken care of. And if you don't do it, there's certainly some potential for some pretty large issues to take place. You know, the feds aren't kidding around anymore. They actually are coming after EMS. I think many of us thought that would never happen, but it's here, and there's some pretty big claims out there now.
Yes, there are, and I know you recently completed certification training in this area with Paige Wolfberg and Worth out in Pennsylvania, so we look forward to hearing more about that as well. I did want to mention today's program is sponsored by Astia Health, JMB Medical, and Savic Buying Group. This is EMS in Wisconsin. We'll be chatting with Dan after our first commercial break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm Dr. Alex Summers, an EMS Medical Director and CEO of Astia Health, and I'm excited to introduce you to the next frontier of healthcare delivery solutions. At Astia Health, we are leading the way in utilizing cutting-edge technology to provide the missing link between community paramedicine providers and higher levels of care. Our innovative solution combines our proprietary software with our custom-built access to care telemedicine cases. These cases facilitate a comprehensive virtual examination, allowing a hospital-grade evaluation to be performed in the field. I look forward to helping you incorporate this solution into your business. Astia Health, access to quality healthcare anytime, anywhere. Look us up on the web at astiahealth.com or call us toll-free at 888-885-4434.
This program is sponsored by Jefferson Fire and Safety, providing high-quality equipment and service to fire, EMS, and police agencies from across Wisconsin, and manufacturer's representative for Lifeline Ambulances. Find them on the web at jeffersonfire.com.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad, or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Dan Williams. So, Dan, I know in the EMS compliance area, very important area, you shared some information with me and just preparing for the program today and why this is important. Maybe that's a good place for us to start, just to get people's attention to know the feds are real serious about this and there's some serious money on the table.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Joe. You know, and I'll be the first to say right out of the box that compliance is not a fun issue, and it's not something that's sexy to talk about or any of those types of things, but it's a reality that we live in today, and we have to make sure that we cover ourselves. Otherwise, our services are going to be in for some very rude awakenings. You know, when people talk about compliance, it's like, you know, first of all, who says we have to do this? Well, the Department of Health Service, DHS, the Office of Inspector General, OIG, and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, CMS. Those are all the acronyms that people hear about, but that's the groups that really say we have to do this. So in 2012, Medicare did a review of their claims, and they paid out $5.8 billion, that's with a B, for ambulance transports, almost double the amount it paid in 2003. So they thought, well, we better look and see what's going on. You know, that, you know, they know that you know, the population is aging and things like that. So there was a natural tendency for it to grow, but that was a pretty significant jump. They found out that Medicare had paid $24 million in the first half of 2012 for ambulance transports that did not meet the program requirements, or basically they were coded wrong. They were false claims. They were fraudulent claims. They were, you know, things that people thought they were doing right but weren't, you know, just those types of things because they were not in the know. And then in addition to that, Medicare paid $30 million for transports for which the beneficiaries did not receive any services for Medicare services at the pickup point or the drop-off location or anywhere else. So those are basically out there looking at, you know, fraudulent claims. These are people who, you know, didn't take anybody anywhere, basically, but billed for it as an ambulance transport. But when they looked into it, they found out that the recipient had not received any benefits or any services at any facility before the ambulance transport or any facility after the ambulance transport. So that's when they started to say, hey, I think we have a problem here. And you don't have to do too many Google searches or dig too deep to find out all of the various investigations that are going on and the monetary fines that are taking place at this point. You know, they're all of them are in the millions of dollars. And when you have an issue, you have to pay all those things back. And I'll get into more of what those kinds of issues can be and what the fines and the paybacks are when we get a little bit deeper.
I know you're working with some ambulance services here in Wisconsin, and we're not going to be naming names, of course. That's confidential. But what are some things that you're noticing, Dan, in the ambulance community here throughout Wisconsin as you start to talk with them about compliance and the things that they need to be aware of?
Well, I think primarily it is just a lack of understanding of what they need to do. You know, they have to have a compliance plan. There's 7, 8, 9, 10 components of that. That have to be covered, and you have to have policies and procedures about how you're going to deal with compliance. You know, what are you going to look at internally as a service? Are you doing any audits internally on your own? Do you have anybody else come in and do any informal audits just to make sure that you're coding correctly and that you're making sure that things are you know, put in the right columns and in the right places so that when a claim goes in, it doesn't wind up being a fraudulent claim. You know, the federal government doesn't care anymore whether you didn't know that you were supposed to do that because it's your job to know. And they don't, you know, they just basically don't use that as an excuse. There was a time, I think, when you could say, well, you know, I really wasn't sure about that. But now in this day and age, it's not that way anymore. And, you know, what they really have now is they have actual contracted companies that work on behalf of the federal government. And they go out and actually they get paid based on what they find. So the more they find, the more they get paid. So there's an incentive for them to find things. And again, I'm not saying that they're out there making things up either, but these are very legitimate researches and audits that are finding, you know, all kinds of things. And I'll say also that for the most part, people are trying to do it correctly. It's just that they don't know some of these things. And like I said earlier, there's no excuse for not knowing. There's lots of information out there that you can find. You know, there's folks like myself who can help you walk through the process and make it easier for you. But you have to make sure, because it's serious dollars out there now that are going to affect you.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of ambulance services are struggling to maintain staffing and hiring and making sure the rig is covered for 24/7 coverage, and then along comes this. that you have a compliance component. I know some ambulance services are working with third-party billers, but that's no excuse. That's not a free pass from any type of responsibility.
No, that's right. You know, third-party billers do a great job, and we have some really good ones in the state of Wisconsin. However, they're basing their billing practices off of the information that you give them. So if you don't give them proper information, they're not going to be able to code it correctly, which then means you're all in the same boat now of having a problem, and you might wind up again paying some money back or whatever. But you know, certainly it doesn't remove your responsibility from doing things correctly and coding things properly.
Okay, then I think the important thing with that is documentation. I know that's in the notes here to make sure we talk about. It's all about documentation. That's the most important thing. What are some highlights that you wish to share with us on that?
Yeah, documentation is really, it's come down to really looking at documentation. Were certain things collected? You know, was there medical necessity? Did this person really need to go in an ambulance? You know, do they have a medical condition? Yes, but is there other ways that they could have gotten to the hospital? You know, one of the things that people say, well, you know, we go to the CBRF or, you know, community-based residential facility or a certified nursing home type thing. We go there all the time in the middle of the night. And those same patients probably during the day would go by the facility's transport van. Well, guess what? That makes probably for the most part, that was not medical necessity because they could have gone by another way, but that service doesn't run at 2 o'clock in the morning, but that doesn't make it medically necessary. So there's that issue. So making sure that the patient really belongs in an ambulance. And then there's reasonableness. You know, is it reasonable to take this person to the hospital? Well, you can have it be reasonable, but still not medically necessary. And that's where things start to get a little bit complicated. You know, what is the place where you pick them up and the destination requirements met? So basically, are you picking them up from a facility that's a regular certified facility and taking them to a facility that's appropriate, like a hospital? I think we all know that in EMS, we aren't able to take people to clinics and things like that from a 911 call. We can take them there, but if it's a Medicare patient, they're not going to pay for that. And it's making sure that you have the mileage documented correctly. And are the patient signature requirements met? You know, our patients, our crew members signing for patients. Well, again, that's okay if the patient's unable to sign. But then you have to state in your documentation, why was the patient unable to sign? So, you have to, your patient care reports have to say that, you know, you were called by 911, responded immediately, and it doesn't mean that it was an emergency. If you responded immediately means that you've met the criteria for readiness. So that's another type of thing. You know, there's the list is quite lengthy. I just hit on a few of the main topics, but those are some of the ones that you see people get into trouble, and that's before the coding takes place.
Another important form too, Dan, is the PCS or the Physician Certification Statement. I recall when I did some transfers here at St. Croix EMS in Hudson, you know, quite frequently we'd get the packet and we definitely wanted to make sure we had the PCS. That's a very important document.
Yeah, the PCS is really the piece of gold that you need for interfacility transports from a hospital or from a facility to a hospital. The PCS is really required. And what that is that the physician certification statement, and this is basically the physician at the sending facility stating that this person needs to be in an ambulance and that the transport would be unsafe basically any other way. And there's some check boxes on there is the patient bed confined? And bed confined, we can talk a long time about what bed confined means, but we won't do that today. It's a lot of those types of things. And then what we find is that sometimes the physicians just want to get the person out of their facility. I know we've all experienced that in EMS. They just want to, you know, they don't want this patient in their facility anymore. They want to get them out. So sometimes they write some things on the PCS that may be just a bit of a stretch to making sure that, you know, it looks like it's a necessary transport. And then, you know, was the signature on the PCS the proper signature? You know, who can sign the PCS? And then most importantly, does the patient's crew documentation or the patient care report sync in with the PCS? So in other words, what I wrote on my ambulance report needs to, and I'm not saying that you should do your report to this way, but if the doc said the person's going to XYZ facility for cardiac evaluation and the patient care report by the EMS personnel says that they're going to a facility to have their leg wound checked, those are dramatically different types of things. And so those have to be looked at as well, because if they don't sync up, there's another area for a situation.
One thing that we surely wanted to cover is the exclusion list. This is interesting with the exclusions, and I don't know how many people realize that when they're in the field, because, you know, as a care practitioner, really the primary focus is the patient. And so you do your patient care report during the call or at the end of the call. But there is an exclusions list that people should probably be aware of in the documentation component, I would imagine. What can be furnished, what can't be furnished?
Well, exclusions is a couple of different things. Yeah, there's certainly the what can and can't be furnished, but the exclusions list that I was speaking of is making sure that none of your personnel that work for you are on the federal exclusions list. Because what that means then, if a person has had an issue and they have in another field or in this field, whatever, and they get put on the federal government's exclusion list, it means that anybody, that if that individual is working for you, every single call that they went on would be considered fraud because they're on the exclusions list. Basically, you can't, an entity, again, ambulance service XYZ, that entity has a person who is on the exclusions list and they don't know it, they're just going to go along. The person's going to go on a lot of calls. The exclusion list says that if you're receiving federal money, which if you're getting Medicare payments or Medicaid payments, anybody on the exclusions list cannot be on any of those calls. And if they find out that they are, every call from the first one that person went on is considered a fraudulent claim and is subject to certainly payback of all of the receipts that person was on, and potential civil and criminal liability for that person. It's a very easy process. You go to the OIG website and slash exclusions, and you will find a place, and you can put your staff's name in, and it'll pops back really quickly of if they're on the list or not on the list. And it's recommended that you do that at least once a year, more often if you can. But that's a huge issue that people aren't aware of. And then people say, well, how far down does the exclusion list go as far as what groups of people? Well, clearly it's all of your regular employees. If you're governed by a board of any sort, anybody on that board or basically anybody who is in a position to have influence over that service, if they're on the exclusions list, they either need to go or you have to quit billing. So it's a very little known issue that people don't understand about, and it's a huge, huge problem if you have people on the exclusions list that are working for you.
I would imagine so. Sorry I misunderstood that, Dan, but yes, definitely, and
okay.
Should be a part of your hiring protocol as well and your annual check. You renew your CPR card, you should probably have this as a part of the checkoff list. Let me give the full website too so our listeners have that. It's https://exclusions.oig.hhs.gov. That'll get you to the exclusions list. So I'm glad that you brought that up, Dan. I'm sure that's a pretty infrequent resource that should be looked at quite a bit more. So
right. I did our people on a regular basis, and you get some near hits, things like that, and you just have, and then you can refine your search down a little bit, but sometimes you learn some things that you wish you didn't know.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. We're chatting with Dan Williams. Dan is an EMS consultant here in Wisconsin. We're talking about EMS compliance. the importance of EMS compliance and really trying to get folks to stay out of trouble. It's really about the audit and the plan. We'll talk more about that after our commercial break. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin.
J&B Medical Supply is one of the nation's largest medical product distribution companies. With thousands of top-quality EMS products and services at better prices, J&B Medical is your only call. Order a copy of their extensive catalog at jmbmedical.com or contact Wisconsin Territory Representative Josh Tebow at 616-915-6392. That's 616-915-6392. At J&B Medical, their mission takes precedence over margins.
Since 1997, Savick Buying Group has been saving members money through world-class buying power in the public safety sector. Hello, this is Savick Executive Director Mickey Schulte. With over 4,500 Savick members throughout North America and strong commitments from our vendor partners, we turn this buying power into products and services at the industry's best prices with agreements from Henry Schein, Zoll Medical, Granger, and many other companies. To receive more information or get started today, contact the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin at 414-236-4192 and mention you would like to be a Savick member or go online to paw.us/Savick, S-A-V-V-I-K. Best of all, PAW pays your annual Savick member fee so you can access millions of products discounted and get real savings absolutely free. Make the call, 414-236-4192, and join Savick today.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. We're chatting with Dan Williams today. Dan's an EMS consultant, very well known throughout the industry here. Dan, we're talking about something called EMS compliance, and folks might not have this as a part of their repertoire as an EMS leader, but they definitely should. What if you were to walk into a service and they said, you know, we don't know much about compliance, we really don't follow it, we don't do any internal audits, what would be your comment to them?
I would say that we need to talk because,
okay.
Again, these are some serious issues, and I fully am aware, and I was in the same boat when I was a service director. You have so many things that you have to do. You have so much other work that you have to do that you have good intentions, and the compliance evaluation is on your pile, but there's other things that get put on that pile that are you know, burning issues for today, and you just keep putting it off. But, we're just talking about primarily the compliance part of the billing side of your business. And, you know, everybody bills now, so it's not like we have any, you know, there might be a couple of services out there that don't, but I would say the large percentages of them do bill, so that this, what we're talking about today is primarily there. But there's also, on the HIPAA side of things, there's an equally important issues on the HIPAA side, because they now, we all said, well, there'll never be any HIPAA police out there, you know, looking for us. But they're, again, same thing as on the billing side, they find out that this is a fairly lucrative business if they find people who are in error. And so you have to do self-assessments and have plans. And that's the biggest, that was kind of a long answer to your question, but you really have to get people to understand that you have to practice this. You can create a plan, you can put policies and procedures, but if it's not part of your culture, it's not going to work. So it's not only something that you have to recognize that you need to do, that's step one. Then the step two is really figuring out how you're going to get it done. And then step three is really putting it into practice in place in your service and making sure that everybody in the service is thinking compliance.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. Dan is a certified ambulance compliance officer through the National Academy of Ambulance Compliance. And I know you recently went through your renewal with Paige Wolfberg and Worth. Dan, if you don't mind sharing your contact information, how can folks get in touch with you?
Sure. You can contact me at 920-559-3551. That's probably the best way. You can also reach me at my email address of, one second. So, yeah, the other piece of this puzzle, Joe, that as I'm looking for my contact information that I should know, but
so, is that Dan EMS Planning at yahoo.com?
That's it.
Here we go. All right. So, Dan, emsplanning@yahoo.com. That's the easiest way to get Dan.
Yeah. So those types of ways, I'd be happy to help. I've got some kind of some packages that, that can get people started with some rates of, we can do this for this amount and that type thing. If I can do things electronically, it's much easier. If I have to come out, then it's a little bit more expensive. But, these are things that people need to have happen. And if I can help people, I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, that's the important thing. And to know where you're at risk. It might be a simple audit. It might show that everything is fine. It might be a few tweaks with how documentation is being done or the process is flowing or internal audits. It might not be a lot to get things in order, but it's better to do it on the front end than the back end after you get a knock on the door. So that's the important thing with this.
Go ahead, Dan.
That's right.
I find that a lot of people aren't, they're doing, for the most part, they're doing things correctly. They just don't have anything written down. There's nothing that says how they're doing it or why they're doing it or what are the checks and balances in what they're doing. You always find something, it's like anything. If you go in and look at something with different eyes, you're going to find things here or there. But I haven't found anything that's been terrible at this point. But what I've just found is a lot of unprepared people.
That's a great service that you're providing. So thank you for offering your time and talent, Dan, to help ambulance services with the compliance piece. We do have just a few minutes, and I know the Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin conference concluded here this past September. Dan is the conference director. Wanted to offer just a few minutes for a quick update. Dan always does a terrific job with hot topics going around the room. All the directors that are in the room share tidbits of what they've done the last 12 months, important things that they've been working on, some challenges that they've encountered. Dan, what were some of the highlights that you could just wrap up to us in a few minutes as to the PSOW conference and what ambulance service directors were talking and thinking about?
Well, I think some of the big things were the whole workforce shortage issue. I know we talked about that on a show here a few months ago, that the workforce shortage in EMS and healthcare really is dwindling. And it's going to become a huge issue as almost everybody's ambulance calls are up. We have a workforce that is not prepared to necessarily deal with that at this point in time. And the other piece of that puzzle is that people started talking about is dealing with the new type of employee. I guess they call them the millennials. It's the people who don't necessarily want a leadership role. They just want to come in, work their 12 hours or 24-hour shifts, go home, not think about anything, come back, 2 days from now and work it all again. But they're not willing to take leadership roles, and that's going to have an effect on the leadership of some of these services as well. But I just think that those were two of the items that we talked about quite a bit. And, of course, then all the rest of them are the ones, how do we get funding for this and that, and, those special types of circumstances that, people don't prepare themselves for but present themselves on a regular basis. But primarily I think it was the workforce shortage and then dealing with the new type of employee. That was also talked about quite heavily when I was out in Pennsylvania a couple weeks ago at the conference about, again, this whole workforce issue is becoming one that could potentially cripple the industry.
It potentially could, and the industry is so reliant on volunteers. That's the other thing. Wisconsin is no different than anywhere nationally. That's the largest challenge right now. Governor Walker has announced his rural plans for 2018, and rural EMS is definitely in that, with trying to help with recruitment and retention in EMS, specifically in volunteer organizations. So it is capturing the attention of a lot of folks. It's just a matter of execution and how you draw up your plans. And it really starts at the local level to bring people into the industry, into the door, and to want to serve their community.
Right. We have to make it attractive to get them in the door, and then we have to make it attractive to keep them in. Once we have them, we need to try to figure out a good way to keep them. And we can't keep playing musical chairs with the personnel.
Right, exactly. I did want to touch base on one thing, too, before we conclude today's show. As we previously reported, the community paramedicine or community EMT bill did pass the Senate unanimously. It also passed the Assembly unanimously. It has been sent to Governor Walker for review. We anticipate the governor signing the community paramedic bill into law, since there was not one nay vote in either the Assembly or the Senate, which is very, very favorable. And simply, we're just waiting for that to happen. Once the governor does sign it into law, Dan, you being the former EMS chief for the state of Wisconsin, what can folks anticipate after Governor Walker signs?
Well, it's like any type of legislation that's passed, there typically is, once the legislation is in place, then there has to be some administrative rules or how you're going to use that legislation and what are going to be the requirements within it. So there'll be a process, I'm sure that will take place. And I know that the department has been looking at this for a long time, so I don't expect that process will take real long. I think they have a pretty good idea of what needs to happen with all those types of things. And then they'll go out and try to help people understand what they need to do. You know, there's education that's out there that has to be approved formally. It's been done for quite a while, but it hasn't been formally approved. Certification, licensure levels that have to be approved. So there's several things that the department will have to deal with and put into place after the legislation is, in fact, signed into law.
Okay, very good. Thanks for clarifying those next steps. Very good. Dan, appreciate you being on the program today. Is there anything you'd like to share in closing?
No, I just thank you for the opportunity to bring this important topic to light. I think it's something, again, like I said, that people are maybe somewhat aware of, but not completely, and maybe they aren't really aware of the potential liabilities that exist around this topic. But I appreciate the opportunity to help educate some folks, and hopefully that'll help them along. And then finally, I'd like to wish everybody happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, it's just around the corner. Dan, thank you very much for your time and information. Again, Dan can be reached at 920-559-3551, or email is danemsplanning@yahoo.com. So thank you very much for sharing your time and information with us today. Always helpful, Dan. And as well, on behalf of the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, happy Thanksgiving to you. Our next program is on November 28th. And we welcome you to join us then. Thank you very much for your time today and listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli. Have a great day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.